Blog Talk Radio.
Good God, what was that?
A giant hairy creature, part ape, part man. Indians call him Sasquatch. They believe he is as gentle as he is powerful and mysterious.
And welcome to Georgia Bigfoot Radio. I'm your host, Dan Miller.
And welcome to Georgia Bigfoot Radio. I am your host, Dan Miller. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Let's get a few items out of the way. I'm having the show tonight a little bit earlier in the week than I normally do, and that's because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So we're going to go ahead and knock it out tonight. I don't have any guests lined up for tonight, mostly because of the holiday, which is not a problem. Therefore, I am going to go ahead and open the phone lines. As a matter of fact, the phone lines are open right now. That's 1-area code 215-383-5709. Once again, that's area code 215-383-5709. If you've had an encounter here in Georgia or anywhere for that matter and you'd like to share it, go ahead, give me a call. Pick up the phone right now. Give me a call. I'll get you on. Also, let me get a few announcements out of the way first. Please go to the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page. There you can give me a like if you like. And also, if you want to send a message, you're more than welcome to click the send message button on the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page and send me a message if you like. This is completely completely optional. And there is a link on the Georgia Bigfoot Radio page, a GoFundMe link. There is a small monthly cost to host the show. If you'd like to donate, you're more than welcome to. But as I have mentioned before, that is completely voluntary on your part. It is not required. All proceeds go directly to the show and are much appreciated. Thank you very much. Let's see. Let's start off with a couple messages that I received after last week's episode. The first question of the night, which came through the message feature on the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page, is Mr. Miller, do you have a favorite podcast regarding Sasquatch that you like to listen to? Well, as a matter of fact, I do. And I'm sure many of you probably listening, my favorite podcast is Sasquatch Chronicles with Wes Germer. I'm sure you all know you're all probably familiar with that show in one way or another. I love that show. The template that Wes and his brothers began with in having some sort of venue where you could express something you have witnessed or heard, but never have been able to find an outlet to do that. Well, these two guys have done that. It's been a great venue to call in and share your encounters. I hope Georgia Bigfoot Radio can someday be as successful as them. And if not, hey, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with being successful here within our nice little state of Georgia or even in the Southeast. But nonetheless, Sasquatch Chronicles with Wes Germer is a great podcast. I love that show. I listen to it every week. I'm even a paying member. So that is the answer to the question. That's what I enjoy listening to. And let's move on to the next question. Mr. Dan, that's kind of cute. This comes from a guy named Harold. Can you expand your comments on disclosure? Okay, well, if you remember, I had mentioned disclosure last week, and I basically broke down disclosure into a short-term problem and a long-term problem, which is why we don't have disclosure. In the short term, you're probably looking at a major financial windfall for a lot of companies. Anything that has to do with hunting or the outdoors or forestry contracts, anything that involves money that's tied to the outdoors is potentially going to suffer greatly. Because once, if these creatures were disclosed by the government or a government entity, some sort of possible rogue entity that's within the Department of Agriculture, I don't know. I'm just thinking off – I made that up off the top of my head just to use that as an example. But if one of those two kind of government figures were to disclose that this creature exists, then you'd be talking a lot of new laws to protect them, which is good because I don't believe they should be hunted or kept in a zoo for that matter. But at the same time, it's going to hurt a lot of companies. In the long term, and this is just my humble opinion here, I had described something along the lines of some sort of social a social struggle between, say, people who are evolutionists versus people who would probably frown upon the existence of this creature that are more religious or spiritual based. I'm probably incorrect in saying that, but it's just my opinion, and we all at this point only have our opinions. But to answer the question on expanding it, I think what Harold is alluding to, if I'm reading this correctly, is in what form? Would it come from a government body? I don't think so, Harold. I think if we were to have disclosure, it would come from a privately based event. Now, what do I mean by a privately based event? What I mean by that is this. Billy and Joe and Jim and Mike are on a hunting trip, and they happen to be in a place where there is a lot of activity. They're sitting around the campfire. They happen to be harassed through vocalizations, maybe rock throwing. They can hear something circling the campsite within the perimeter of the tree line. And I know probably all this sounds familiar because it's happened to people out in the wilderness, this kind of behavior, but nonetheless, this is just an example. And let's say one of these creatures, or maybe even more than one of these creatures, decides to lose its temper, which could easily happen. And these four men are armed, and in self-defense, they shoot and kill one out of self-defense. They happen to have the strength among the four. Now, this is a big if, and this is completely hypothetical, but if the other creatures retreat, or there was just only the one creature, coupled with that these four men have the capability of taking this large, humongous creature out of the wilderness, coupled again with the fact that they would somehow come up with a good plan of announcing to the public that they have a body that can be examined. And that is just an unbelievable amount of conversation and debate we could probably have in another show. But let's just say, to keep it simple right now, to answer the email that Harold asked, all of those factors are met with little or no difficulty, which is, again, completely fantasy, I know. But let's just say it happens. That's where the disclosure would come from. A private citizen or group of citizens, or even researchers or investigators, however you want to call it, They go into the wilderness, and they, or maybe a truck driver hits one by accident, and has the capability. Maybe he has one of those forklifts in the back of his 18-wheeler, and he's able to pick up the creature and put it in the back of his 18-wheeler. And then maybe he has the, hopefully, the common sense and the awareness to approach this very carefully, not go hog wild, and disclose it to the public that, hey, these creatures exist. Here's the dead body. Same thing with maybe the possible scenario of hunters or hikers or whatever it may be. The whole point of what I'm trying to get at is this. Disclosure does not and will not come from a government body or entity. If disclosure were to happen, it would come from a private group of people or a person, happen under an unscheduled, unsuspected, completely by surprise event, like getting hit by a vehicle, or maybe a hunter or hunters kill one out of self-defense because it was attacking them. I'm not quite sure. Again, that's all hypothetical. I can't emphasize this enough. But that's the form that the possible potential disclosure would take form of. It wouldn't come from an on-air announcement from a government body or anything like that. All of this that I just said is completely my opinion, and you're more than welcome to chime in on that through either if you want to come in on the show or if you want to send me a message, whatever you like to do. Okay? Okay, I think that's enough about that. Let's move on to the next one. This comes from a girl. Very nice. This comes from Karen. Dear Dan, I love your show, and I was a little freaked out about the discussion of Dogman near Red Top Mountain last week. Well, Karen, let me tell you something, sweetie. You're not alone. I have camped on Red Top Mountain many times through the last 5 years. I have hiked Red Top Mountain and all its various trails many more times. I have biked Top Mountain's trails. I have fished off of Lake Allatoona off of Red Top Mountain. Knowing that I and probably thousands of others are participating in that much activity where there is a possible wolf-like, dogman-like creature that can swipe you away, kill you, eat you up, and nobody's going to know about it, is quite frightening. It is very frightening. Now, do I have any confirmation? I'm not calling anybody. I'm not saying that my guest last week is making anything up, because I have no proof of that. I have no proof that people have seen what they've seen. But at the same time, it's not hard to connect the dots when you look at what do we have out there. What are these dots that I'm talking about? Well, I know you're probably all going to roll your eyes, but we have the David Paulides books that I speak of a lot. We have unbelievable encounters of these creatures from other people all over the country. So, is everybody on a mass scale from one coast to the other making this up? I don't think so. I may not have confirmation or solid proof, but I sure have enough to go on that says there's a good possibility these creatures are out there. Couple that with the fact that these creatures are at a place where hundreds, if not thousands of people like myself, go hunting, camping, fishing, biking, and overall great recreation in a very busy place. That is frightening, Karen. I know it is, and I'm right there with you. It frightens me too. So what do we do? Hey, you know, you got to be careful. When you go hiking, go with a group. And even then, does it hurt to be, armed? No, it doesn't hurt at all. Even if it's something as simple as a knife, mace, or a combination of both. Go with a group. Try to avoid sundown and doing it at night. You know, daytime's always the best time. And if things don't feel right or don't look right, then don't do it. Turn around. Get off the trail. I've done that before. As a matter of fact, and this is no lie, folks, I've been on the Iron Hill Trail on Red Top Mountain, and I remember this was 2 years ago, back in 2014. I hiked about, I don't know, it wasn't that far, half a mile, maybe just a mile in, and I just felt awful. I did like just the worst case of dread. There was no sounds, no squirrels, no bugs, no birds. This is in the middle of the summer now, no nothing. I turned around, and when I had parked, there was only one other car in the parking lot, which was probably somebody who just left it there overnight. So that means I'm the only one on that trail at that moment with nobody else around, coupled with no birds, no squirrels, no insects, no sounds, no nothing. Then I get that dread feeling, and I honestly turned around and walked out. And you can say, okay, Dan, you're a little paranoid. Maybe I am. Maybe the missing 401 series is getting to my head. But so be it. Because if I'm gonna go hiking alone, which I know I shouldn't, because I just said it, you shouldn't. But if I do, and I try to avoid that as much as I can, and if things don't look right, at least I have that awareness to look around and say, okay, there's nobody here but me. Things don't feel right. Things don't sound right. I'm turning around, getting out. At least I have that awareness. And if you're hiking alone, which you shouldn't do, you should have that awareness too. I don't blame you for being scared. And, you know, hey, listen, that's not a reason not to go outdoors. We just have to be careful. You know, have things in your that you can use for self-defense. You know, have a GPS locator. They're not that expensive. I'm talking about the satellite kind, not just using your phone. You know, and make sure you have stuff with you: emergency blanket, a backpack full of, MREs, maybe the mini first aid kit. I mean, all that stuff. Bring it with you. You just never know. And if you play it safe like that, then most of the time you're going to be okay. And if things go bad, at least you'll be ready for it. All right, so let's move on. Once again, I want to emphasize the phone lines are open tonight. Area code 215-383-5709. One more time, that was area code 215-383-5709. What I have decided to do is that tonight I want to discuss an incident known as the Dyatlov incident. Now, I'm sure most of you who are in the realm of Bigfoot investigation, at one time or another, you're probably going to come across this story. Now, for those of you that don't know, I'll just give you the quick version. In 1959, 10 individuals and let's see, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think it was seven guys and three girls, maybe, and I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head. I forgot the girl to boy ratio, but it was a mixture of both young men and young women. And they were on a hiking expedition, the Ural Mountains of Russia. And again, this is in 1959. And 9 out of the 10 individuals mysteriously died. And why do I say mysteriously? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Now, 9 out of the 10 individuals passed away. There was the 10th guy actually had to leave the expedition early because of illness. So he wasn't in the area when the other 9 died. As a matter of fact, he was interviewed back in 2010 in a documentary. And he passed away in 2013. Yeah, he passed away in 2013. But anyway, Why have I decided to talk about this tonight? Well, let me say this, folks. When I come across a documentary, a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or a Yeti documentary. I would say about a third of the time I don't watch them because they're crap. The other third, I probably don't watch because I've already seen them a few times. Okay, so I've seen them a few times. I know the content, so no need to watch it again. And then the remaining third of what I see captivates me. And I have to say that I came across a documentary the other night that was based on the Dyatlov incident called Russian Bigfoot, the Yeti Lives. It was on the Destination Channel. For those of you here in Georgia or maybe even the Southeast, if you have DirecTV, it's channel 286. So you may know what I'm speaking of. If you have a different cable provider, I'm sure you still have that channel. It's probably just a different number. But nonetheless, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I was captivated by this documentary. Now, the documentary was done by a gentleman named Mike Lebecki, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Now, I don't know anything about Mr. Lebecki. I've never heard of him. I don't know anything about him. So anything I see on TV where I'm not really too informed about either the content or the individual, clearly I take it with a small grain of salt. I don't have any reason not to believe this guy, but I may just be ill-informed. Again, if you want to chime in on this information regarding the Dyatlov incident, feel free to call me, 215-383-5709. Now, so Mr. Mike Lebecki does this documentary, and he investigates the mysterious deaths of these nine hikers in the Ural Mountains in Russia back in 1959. Now, so let's start with the obvious question first. What makes their deaths so mysterious? It's easy to say, well, for God's sakes, man, they were in the Ural Mountains in the middle of winter, frostbite, you know, avalanche. I mean, there's a bunch of natural accidents that can occur, natural incidents, to cause the death of somebody in that region of Russia. And I don't disagree with that. Here's the here's where the mystery starts, folks. When the Russian authorities recovered the bodies, there's a bunch of items associated with the bodies that we have to use or that we have to talk about, kind of like in a manner of a checklist, that will ultimately define why this was so mysterious in the way they died. First and foremost, some of the bodies that were recovered without clothes. Some of the bodies didn't have clothing. Okay, so you don't go running out in the middle of the snow in the middle of the Ural Mountains without your clothes on. You just don't do it. Drugs and alcohol were not involved. So that's mystery number one. Why were some of the people clothed? As a matter of fact, the tent that was found, boots and clothes were found inside the tent. Okay, so there's item number one. Here's item number two, related to the tent itself. The tent itself had been ripped from inside, and those rips were facing only the tree line of the thick forest from the open area that the tent was facing. Okay? Here is another item that makes this mysterious. One of the recovered bodies, a female, was missing her tongue. Just her tongue. Okay? And another recovered body showed that this individual's eyes were gone. Okay? Here's something else, and this really, really adds to the mystery. It was determined that these individuals died from massive internal injuries. It wasn't that they had fallen victim to the elements. Wasn't the snow, wasn't the cold. They died from internal injury. Okay, so it certainly wasn't a pack of wolves or a bear. They died from internal injuries, okay? Now, there are other mysteries besides the focus on the bodies that I just went through. There was a note written by one of the victims found inside the tent, okay? And that note read, and I'm going to quote it here. It said, "The snowman exists." That's exactly what his note said. Now, here is something else. The Russian authorities found large, mysterious footprints leading from the campsite where the tent was to the tree line of the forest. Okay? And those were documented in photos. And in the documentary by Mr. Lebecki, he presented a photo, and let me back up for just a moment. One of the hikers had a camera. One of the hikers that died had a camera. And Mr. Lebecki, in his documentary, presented a photo that has never been seen by the public until it just aired the other night. I have to tell you, if this is completely true and not part of the producer's wish to spice up the documentary by any means, or if the origins of this picture come straight from this deceased hiker's camera, folks, it's going to send chills down your spine, because what was in the camera that was never released to the public is a photo of a large, bulky, tall biped cross-referenced with a tree that it's standing next to, stands about 7.5 to 8 feet tall. It is covered in hair from top to bottom, toe to head, completely covered in hair. It's massive, no neck, and it's got a cone-shaped head. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, we all know the photo, the still photo of the creature in the Patterson-Gimlin film. If you were to take that creature and turn it all the way towards Roger's camera, so you're getting a frontal photo of that creature, this photo looks like. It's never been presented to the public. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is some serious information. You have 9 hikers that died from internal injuries and not the elements, like they were beaten. You have the strange fact that you have someone's tongue missing and others' eyes missing. You have footprints, you have a photo, and you have these strange cuts in your tent facing the tree line of the forest, as if something, as if you were trying to keep an eye on something. Possibly, maybe a creature attacked their campsite, and that's why clothes and boots were left behind. That is a serious, serious theory based on the evidence that was presented in this documentary that I have outlined tonight. I'm sure I've missed a few things, but I'm doing it off the top of my head, so please forgive me. But I've definitely highlighted some of the more important points. Now, the gentleman that passed away in 2013, the 10th hiker that left the expedition, the hiking trip, if you will, left it early because he was ill. He had fallen ill. He presented another piece of evidence that was not available to the public, from what I know, until it was presented in this documentary by Mr. Lebecki. He found, this is the gentleman that, the 10th hiker that passed away back in 2013, he took a photo of a military issued boot cover that he had found in the snow that was not far from the campsite. So now, is there another item that we have to factor into this mystery? Why would Russian authorities be there in secret? Why were they there before the actual search and rescue team got there? Why? Were they there? And if so, why? It looks that way because we have a piece of gear. I tell you, folks, I've been researching and investigating this realm of Bigfoot for a long time, since I was a kid. And I always knew about this incident, but I've never really taken a close look at it. And I can tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are listening, if you take about 15, 20 minutes, look into it. Go to Google, put in the Dyatlov Pass incident. There's some great books on it. You can check it out on Wikipedia. And if you happen to come across this documentary by Mike Lebecki, maybe it's on YouTube. I'm not quite sure. But I would, in my opinion, and again, this is just me, just my opinion, it's worth looking into. It really is. It will captivate you. Well, let me put it this way. It captivated me a lot faster than I expected. And it really casts, it really sheds a light on what might be out there. And it's scary, you know? Once again, if you want to chime in, if you know anything about this incident, feel free to give me a call. The area code is 215-383-5709. Once again, that's 215-383-5709. Now, in keeping – actually, let me get a swig of water real quick, folks. All this talking gives me a scratchy throat. Anyway, in talking about this documentary, okay, in the documentary, in the second half of the documentary, this individual, Lebecki, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If not, I apologize. He actually takes a trip to the Ural Mountains in Russia with a female translator who's also a news reporter in Russia. And he actually decides to hike and go on an expedition to the same spot where the incident happened. Okay? And what he found, once again, sent some chills up my spine. Let me elaborate. While he was in his campsite, he was able to capture audio of something that is completely, and when he had it analyzed, the audio was completely unidentifiable. In other words, the audio does not match any known creature on this planet. And when I heard it in the documentary, it sounds a lot like some of the recorded howls that you hear on the BFRO website. Very, very chilling. Also in the documentary, before he actually got to the campsite, he had found a very large, extensive system of caves. And he decided to spend the night in that cave. And when he was in there, he had discovered not one, but two areas deep inside that cave that were basically what looked like bedding areas that had been put together from pine straw, grass, brush, whatever. Now, let's keep in mind that there is nobody that lives there deep in the caves of the Ural Mountains. There's no population. So what the heck is putting together a bedding area in that, in those deep caverns? And so that also was discovered in, and presented in this documentary. Now, let's move on to a little bit of conspiracy theory, which I've got to throw that in. I mean, some could argue that what I'm suggesting is a conspiracy theory, but nonetheless, let's talk about it. One of the two Russian authorities that were assigned to this case went on record stating that in the area where the hikers were found, where their bodies were found, he witnessed very odd, strange moving lights in the sky, green lights to be exact. Some have argued that this was some sort of Russian military experiment gone bad. I think there might be a small amount of credence to that, because I had mentioned just a minute ago about the military issued boot cover that was recovered and photoed. And that piece of gear was found leading to the hiker's deceased bodies. And that was found before search and rescue had arrived. So what are we looking at here? We have some theories that people are throwing out that it was maybe secret military experiment. I mean, you could also couple the fact that strange radiation was found in the area. The fact that someone's eyes were missing and someone else's tongue was missing, that is a super strange set of items that would fall along some sort of experiment gone bad. I really don't buy into it, but okay. As I've said many times, all we have at this point are our opinions. Okay? So there might be something there. I don't know. Some have speculated aliens. Well, that's certainly if you're seeing strange green lights and you look at all the strangeness that surrounds the deceased bodies, maybe. Because again, these people didn't die because of the elements. They died of massive eternal injuries. Okay? But frankly, I think there's enough what I would call proof to theorize that I think what they ran into was a very pissed off Yeti. That's my opinion, folks. You've got the photo. You've got the photoed footprints. You've got the strange items that surround the deceased, cutting your tent from the inside, only from one side facing a tree line, the photo, I mean, the photo for me really kind of puts the icing on the cake. I wish I could show all this to you. I wish I could, like, you know, project some magic beam from my TV, because I saved the documentary on my DVR and I beamed it and I could beam it out to the to my Facebook page, Georgia Bigfoot Radio, so you all could see that photo. Maybe if you do some looking around in the internet, I'm sure it's probably there. I'm probably incorrect in saying that it's not possible to find, but so again, you've got footprints. You've got people running out of their tent without clothes, without shoes, boots. And you've got the fact that these people died from internal injuries and not the elements. Couple all that with the photo and the note. Let's not forget the note now. What did that note say written by that deceased hiker? The snowman exists. Now, this leads me to one point I want to make. What is the snowman? Well, I can answer that for you. In that area of Russia, there's a very old native tribe of people called the Mansi, M-A-N-S-I. And at first, some of the Russian authorities actually blamed the Mansi for the deaths of these people, because they felt like the Mansi were short-tempered about people infringing on their territory. But as it turns out, there's no proof behind that, no evidence. And but I will say this, just like here in North America, when you talk to Native Americans and they refer to the tall, hairy men of the forest, whether it be Sasquatch, Bakwas, whatever other names they have for it. Okay, the Mansi in Russia also have a nickname for a large, hairy creature that resides deep in the forest. And you know what they call it? The snowman. That also, too, was presented in the documentary. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, allow me to summarize. I do believe, not 100%, but I believe that these individuals, these nine hikers, were killed by a large Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti-type creature, Yeti because of the area of the world that this happened in. And there are many things to point to that theory. The footprints, cuts in the tent towards the tree line, the note, the photo, and the way they died. Now, I understand with one person's eyes being gone and another person's tongue being gone, that's something you don't see or hear about. I should say that's something you just don't hear about in the Bigfoot world. At least I never have. You know, maybe the Yeti has some sort of taste for warmer flesh. And I'm sorry, that's a little disgusting. I'm sorry about that. Just maybe. Needless to say, those two items that I just named off, they definitely add a high degree of strangeness to something that's already very strange. So, but it's not enough to sway my opinion. My opinion is that these nine hikers died because of a Yeti attack. That's just me, folks. Okay, so let's take a break for a minute, and when we come back, we'll resume the discussion. Everybody sit tight, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Georgia Bigfoot Radio. I am your host, Dan Miller. And we've got just about 15 minutes left, so let's go ahead and just wrap this up for the night. I just received a message while we were on break, and it comes from Lindsay. Hello, Lindsay. Thank you for listening. I like the fact that all you ladies are listening out there. Okay, so the question from Lindsay is, Dear Dan, do you have, or I'm sorry, it says, what are your favorite Bigfoot documentaries? I guess she was listening tonight and heard me mention about how like a third of them are crap, which I don't watch. A third of them I've watched a bunch of times and therefore don't need to watch them. And then the other third kind of captivate me and I like them, which led me to talk about the documentary regarding the D'Otloff incident. So, to answer your question, Lindsay, here's a small list of my favorite Bigfoot documentaries. I do believe this is on YouTube. I think all of them can be found on YouTube now. But if you go, say, to YouTube and you put in Bigfootville 2002, that was a documentary that focused on a rash of Bigfoot sightings in southeast Oklahoma. Now, that's pretty significant because that is a very active area with Sasquatch sightings, even to this day. Also, southeast Oklahoma is where we have the famous Siege of Hanobia, or I'm not quite sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but based on the spelling, it looks like the Siege of Hanobia, the two brothers that were basically forced out of their home after being harassed and attacked by multiple creatures. So that's a good documentary. There was about three different versions of Bigfoot within the context of the Monster Quest documentaries that I really enjoyed. As a matter of fact, the very first one was Bigfoot, and it included Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who, by the way, him and his associates were stalked at a cabin that had been vandalized by a supposed creature, and he had a rock thrown at him. That was a great one. And then within the realm of Monster Quest, I know they did, I think they did a Skunk Ape one that I liked, and they also did an Ohio Grassman episode that I liked as well. And I do believe there are a couple more within Monster Quest, but I can't think of the ones off the top, those other two off the top of my head. But those three Monster Quest ones were good. Bigfootville was good. Let's see what else. You know, the National Geographic Channel, they did a really good Bigfoot documentary. And I don't remember the title. I think it was just Bigfoot. Oh, gosh. I apologize, Lindsay, but I can't remember the exact title. But narrated by the same guy who does a lot of the narrations for Frontline on PBS. Anyway, that was a really good documentary, and they kind of dived deep into the Patterson-Gimlin film. What else? Of course, you know, I'm at the age where I was a child of the 70s. So I have to mention, of course, In Search Of by Leonard Nimoy. And of course, his Bigfoot episode, which you talk to any of us within the realm of Bigfoot, we'll all tell you that the big three really influenced us. What are the big three? The big three from the 70s, which were The Legend of Boggy Creek, the Bigfoot episode of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and of course recordings by Ron Moorhead, the Sierra Sounds, which were also done in the late 70s. As a matter of fact, one of Mr. Moorhead's clips is in the introduction of the show. When I say, "Good God, what was that?" and then you hear the Bigfoot chatter, that comes from the Sierra Sounds. So there's some information you can feast on for yourself there, Lindsay, okay? Now, let's get back just for a few more minutes while we still have time. And again, if you want to get a call in before the end of the show, now is the time to do it. Area code 215-383-5709. Once again, that was 215-383-5709. Again, if you want to call in, now's the time to do it because we are getting close to the end of the show. So I guess now is probably the right time to I guess, perform, or I should say verbalize, some sort of summary about what happened in the Ural Mountains in 1959. I've laid out my opinion based on what I know and what proof has been presented. I guess to add to, or to, I guess to finally make my summary, I guess the bottom line is this. The injuries sustained by these hikers were so grave and extraordinary that could only have been inflicted by an inhumanly strong creature. The fact that a tongue was ripped out, the fact that these people died from internal injuries, massive body blows, head injuries. You don't get that from being too cold. You just don't. It wasn't the it wasn't the native tribes, the Mansi. It wasn't an avalanche, because all of that was easily disproven already. I'm not quite sure what more I could add to that. All I can tell you is that, you know, if you come across this documentary by Mike Lebecki, I do suggest you check it out. If it's been defunct or if there's some sort of controversy surrounding it, I'm unaware of it. Feel free to fill me in on that. But nonetheless, like I said, a third of the time I'm captivated by certain documentaries, and this was one of them. I knew about this incident. I never really looked into it deeply until now, and I still have way more to research. And I do plan on buying a couple books on it. I did see some books on Amazon. It looks like there was based on the reviews, it looks like Anatoly Gushkin, I hope I pronounced that right, he wrote a really good book on it back in 1990 called The Price of State's Secrets is Nine Lives. And, you know what I just came across? Some information. Apparently there was a TV show called Dark Matters, and they did a story about the Dyatlov incident. So if you happen to come across that, you'll find some information there. Let's see. There's a lot of books that I'm looking at online at the moment, so I apologize for the small silence there. But there's too many to name. But nonetheless, I know all of you out there, you can go to Amazon, or the best thing to do is just Google it. Google the Dyatlov Pass incident, Rural Mountains, 1959, and you'll just have a nice plethora of websites and books you can choose from to explore this deeper. I know I'm going to. Okay, I just had another message come in. This will probably be the last one of the night, and it probably would not be a Georgia Bigfoot Radio show if we didn't mention the Missing 411 series, because I just got a message from Chris. Chris wants to know, let's see if I can read this. Let me put my reading glasses on. Will the Missing 411 series help bring us to disclosure? Oh, that's a good question. No. As a matter of fact, if anything, you know, I've said from the beginning that what the Missing 411 series does, it does two things. Number one, it establishes a pattern. And within that pattern is a series of facts that fit Mr. Paulides' profile. That profile leads us to a point that says something very strange and very odd is happening here, and we don't know what it is. So when search and rescue says, well, they're missing because they just got lost, well, this summary of facts based on patterns and profiles that Mr. Paulides has put together, well, that tells us that it's not just people getting lost or people freezing to death. It's not. It's something much more mysterious and deeper. And ultimately, what we're trying to do is find the truth. Okay, and that's what we're doing. Now, I have said many a times, for those of you that have listened before, that if I could ask one question or maybe one theory, I would say this. The facts show that these specific disappearances are so strange and mysterious that the source of the disappearance is just as strange and mysterious. So what would constitute a strange and mysterious entity that would create such mystery? Well, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, large satanic cult groups? We don't know. We just don't know. What we do know is that it is strange and mysterious, whatever's causing these disappearances, because the facts show that they are strange and mysterious. And that's unfortunately where we have to end the conversation. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is get to the truth. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that said, I think I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I hope you've enjoyed my discussion. Georgia Bigfoot Radio will be back next week. Hopefully we'll have a guest or two lined up. If not, that's okay. You can still call in regardless whether we have a guest or not. Phone lines will always be open to all of you out there. I want to wish all of you a happy Thanksgiving. Be well, be safe, be thankful. Treat your animals good. I'm a huge dog lover and a huge animal lover all around, so treat them good as good and just like their family. And I wish you all a great Thanksgiving, and we will talk again next week. If you have any questions, comments, or you're wondering when the next show will be, again, just go to the Georgia Bigfoot Radio Facebook page. There you can leave me a message. You'll also see all the information you need to see regarding the next episode. Okay, everybody, that's it for tonight. Happy Thanksgiving. Take care. Thank you.